But obviously some of the things we want to talk about does get some blood boiling and does get some upset. So I think it would be unfair to sit here and tell you how wonderful you are and then we'll go home smiling. If you got 20 16-year-olds if they're at a barbershop, you would be lucky to get a quarter of those actually on the floor cutting. Yeah. And it would be honest and it would be real. And the barbers would say, look, mate, you're not cut out for this. And the ones that shine would go on to have a career. I think some of the training providers have lowered the bar. Would that be unfair?
I think in its entirety, yes, definitely unfair. I think there's some excellent practice.
No, I don't disagree, but
we hear of some instances where employers are saying to us, they're not ready to work for me.
The problem with Ofsted is they are not at all in any way interested in the skill of hairdressing and barbering. It's all about the paperwork. Am I right? I mean, it's the same guys that do schools that do us.
Yeah.
And you can imagine it finds a shit out of us when they come in. It is the exact same. I'm correct to that.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban and we're here at Wolf in King's Cross. Joe has very kindly let us use his studio to record in. And I'm here with Adam Sloan from Men's Fed.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Anthony.
And from Emma McKay from Sitting Guilds.
Thank you.
Welcome. We're training such a dominant and hugely vital part of our industry. And I've spoken here, we've spoken to so many barbers, and barbers who run apprenticeships, barbers who run their own private schools, and even quite recently chatting to people who've recently finished their apprenticeship. So we've been covering training. So I think, I'm really pleased that that we got the privilege of having you two here to really talk about the qualification. Yeah, and that's really it. I have reached out to a handful of other people and other barbers who've sent me some points and questions. Don't worry, we'll cover them. But first of all, really, I think maybe we should start with talking about where you guys are, what you're here, what your role is, and maybe how you got to that, and then we can run on to there. So maybe I think a lot of people listening will know you, Adam. So maybe we give Emma the first step of how you came to it.
So I am a senior product lead at City & Guilds. I've been there, goodness, I think 10 years this year. So I come from a hair and beauty background, teaching and managing in large further education colleges for, I think it was 15, 17 years. Following that, started doing some sort of some consultancy work with City & Guilds around assessment. I did lots of different sort of international projects as well. Joined as a product lead and an industry manager. So my role at City & Guilds has very much been around employer and stakeholder engagement. So liaising with the Department for Education, the Institute, many, many sort of key stakeholders, employers across the hair and barbering and beauty industry areas, but also that product management as well. So looking at the qualifications, looking at the apprenticeship standards, supporting the development of those, what's needed, what our customers, so the private training providers, the further education colleges, what they need from an awarding organisation and an endpoint assessment organisation in terms of delivering that learning and assessment.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Great. Follow that, really, can I? I started, I'm getting my 46th year, and I started under my father, who was a barber. So I was saying earlier to you, I came into the industry as a barber, then became a hairdresser, and obviously we're barbering. And it's been a massive passion of mine. In 1999, when it was Big Yin, last name of my company, we had Big Yin Barbers, and we delivered 25% of the barbering qualifications in the UK. So we kind of got in there really early in 1999, done a massive show at World Skills, and so I love the industry and I love the education side, and I'm very, very fortunate to chair the board for barbering under Emma, and work closely with the standards, writing logbooks, etc. So yeah, I love the industry, mate. That's what I'm about.
Thank you. Excellent. We did have Mark Raymond booked from VTCT. For today's, but unfortunately, I'm reading it here just so that I get it right. He was invited and we was booked, but last week pulled out as his bosses would only allow him to join us today if we would agree to a positive marketing agenda, which of course we wouldn't. So not trying to trip you guys trap you. It is just a conversation, but obviously some of the things we want to talk about does get some blood boiling and does get some upset. So I think it would be unfair to sit here and tell you how wonderful you are and then we'll go home smiling. But I guess really we should start with, you know, what's the future of the apprenticeship? You know, we all know that many, many barbershops are struggling. And we certainly know we're expecting them to take on apprentices. We have none of the government money comes our way. We're not only trapped now, and it's only getting worse in the last budget in the way we pay our apprentices. For our international listeners, money is provided by the government for the education, and that goes to the providers. But the employer creates a place for them and generally will work 4 days in a shop and have 1 day in college, or can work within the store the whole time but have an assessor come in and do a day or so's training with them a month. But really, that's kind of where we're at. And obviously now recent budget has made the cost of apprentices more expensive. How do you, is this something that you've spoken about privately? I mean, you must live it firsthand.
I live it. You know, yes. I mean, obviously, I've had many conversations with barbershops. We look after apprentices. And obviously, I work closely with the AO. I mean, it's government-led. I mean, I think one of the things we need to get, the misconception is that the government set the standards and the award organisations have to then fix into that, you know, whatever units they want. So the money is set by the government. In regards to training providers looking after salons, there is a way to do it. They can put them on the books. There is they can pay for it because again, that has to be done correctly. Mm. You know, and it's, I mean, you know, if you talk about barbering, for me, Anthony, it's the Wild West. There's four ways for me to become a barber. One is a gold standard apprentice. That's, I think, because then you are working 4 days in the shop and 1 day 20% off the job on in a salon. And then you've got your private courses and then you've got your college. And I think they're quite similar. The college probably isn't preparing you for shop work, but you are going to get your fundamentals and you're going to get all your theory. The private courses, the thing that I see with them, 6 to 8 weeks, they're all going to be great skin faders. You know, but I mean, you know, we've got online education at the MH Fed and we've had some top people. You ask them to do a uniform layer. These are great hairdressers and barbers and, you know, structured haircuts like doing a square layer and uniform layer. You can't do in 6 to 8 weeks. Mm. It's impossible. Absolutely impossible. So and then for me, the fourth way is the old way, which is you go and work in the shop and they train you. And so there's only four ways to become a barber. And that's how I kind of see that.
But we're very governed by, as you say, the criteria that's laid out by government.
Yes.
Which I think, you know, the barber curriculum is relatively new. Certainly compared to the hairdressing curriculum.
Yeah, it is.
But it still seems woefully out of date.
Yeah, again, you know, it's set by the government.
Yeah, but but surely there are barbering companies that are involved in that conversation.
Absolutely. I mean,
so how is it getting through?
Okay, so I mean, pre-pandemic, it was a really quite exciting time because the previous government had a real drive. So sort of young people were going to be either doing on sort of leaving sort of mandatory education at 16. They were going to be doing an apprenticeship or like a T-level kind of technical qualification, or they were going to be doing A-levels. Mm-hmm. There was a desire for a real simplified, streamlined sort of mode of education. And then we were working towards that, and we thought, goodness, you know, this is going to be a real opportunity. We looked and supported the steering groups very much around revising those previous apprenticeship standards. So as an awarding organisation ourselves and with our colleagues at the other awarding organisations, we're very proactive in sitting on all of those government groups. So the steering groups, the trailblazer groups, who really much work with all of the employers to sort of write those standards. So we saw back in 2023 that 47% sort of funding band uplift following the revision of that hair professional standard. And there was about a 27% funding band uplift for the barber as well. And there was a revision of the knowledge, the skills and the behaviours. During the pandemic, I think, the amount of salons and the barber shops that sadly had to close, the pressures on the finances with, you know, taking on employers. So many people we've seen moving to that rent-a-chair type of business organisation, we've found it increasingly more difficult for apprentices to find a position in the industry. We've seen a steady increase of learners coming through to full-time education. With the full-time education, some fantastic modes of study, but they need to be coupled with work experience. You know, they need to be coupled with real-life learning at the same time as, you know, undertaking the qualifications. So what we do is we build the qualifications, you know, for the on-program journey as part of the apprenticeship or for the full-time education learning. But there has been quite a disparity between if the learner's done an MVQ or a VRQ or a technical qualification over the years. The current drive is actually that whether you're a full-time education learner or whether you're an apprentice learning as part of an apprenticeship journey, the qualification will be mapped and aligned to exactly the same standards. So we've been starting to work on qualifications that are reformed so they're actually taking on board the standard that sets, that occupational standard that the government institute, you know, the steering groups have set, that the apprentices currently are working towards as part of their on-program journey. But we'll see that standard, that qualification, mirrored in full-time education as well. What the centres will need to do, whether they're private training providers or further education colleges, is make sure that wraparound, so that real-life work experience, is embedded. Because what you can find is there's such a difference, isn't there, between a learner leaving full-time education with absolutely a concrete, solid foundations of a qualification, but needing to learn, how do I go to work? Do I turn up on time for work? Managing different types of clients, those real-life working experiences, between an apprentice that studied the same type of qualification but has been on the shop floor. So they've experienced the difficult customers, they've had to run late or their trains have been delayed on the way into work. So they've experienced a different type of scenario as part of that journey. So I certainly believe the future in terms of the qualification will be much more aligned, will be much more mapped across the most recent trends, the knowledge and the skills and the behaviours. But the emphasis is also going to be on industry to support that learning journey, whether you have an apprentice or whether you're working with a learner in full-time education.
I mean, that's the problem at the moment, though. The industry's engagement is, it's all carrot, it's all stick and no carrot.
Yes.
You know, from our point of view, it's difficult. You know, you really just break down the numbers. Mm. You know, it's not 2 years. You know, if you're aligning this with government's view on further education, A level is a 2-year course.
Yes.
We've got City and Guilds is 15 to 18 months. Mm. The funding for that, if we're looking at payment, is coming from the shops that are paying the apprentices' wages. First year apprentice is roughly going to cost you about £1,000 a month in salary. So you're on £12,000 a year wages. Mm. And then within the second year, it's going to go up. And certainly with the, you know, the amazing older people that are coming into the industry for second or third careers, it could cost you, by the second year, could be costing you up to £25,000 a year for someone who effectively can't cut hair. Mm-hmm. While you're still waiting for them to get through their EPA, you're still waiting for them to qualify. So there seems like an awful lot of onus from our point of view when, and I don't know if you think it's more the training provider, that, you know, you get good barbershops that will engage and train their staff well. Mm. You'll get some that will have them sweeping up and tidying up and running around for lunches. I think that's less because they're so expensive. Mm-hmm. But equally, you know, there must be a way of showing that there are service providers that aren't fit for purpose, that the bar's set too low, that we're allowing students to qualify when they shouldn't have, because the training provider... It's not in the training provider's interest to fail people. Now, I'm not saying all will do that, but I know, you know, when I started with Sassoons with like 17 other people as an apprentice. There was only three of us that made it to the end.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Gosh.
Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. now, if you've got an intake of 20 kids going into, 20 apprentices going into a college course, how are 20 leaving? You know, mm-hmm. how are they leaving and qualified? Because the pass rate is not anywhere relevant to what would actually happen if you got 20 16-year-olds appear at a barbershop. If you got 20 16-year-olds appear at a barbershop, you would be lucky to get a quarter of those actually on the floor cutting. Yeah. And it would be honest and it would be real. Mm-hmm. And the barbers would say, look, mate, you're not cut out for this, or this isn't going to work for you. And the ones that shine would go on to have a career. I think some of the training providers have lowered the bar. Would that be unfair?
I think in its entirety, yes, definitely unfair. I think there's some excellent practice.
No, no, I don't disagree. But
the country,
some,
but there are, we hear of some instances where employers are saying to us, they're not ready to work for me. You know, they haven't got the behaviours that I expect. The only way we're going to overcome that is with the employers engaging with those providers and with the centres. And it, that in itself is a challenge, time and money. You know, the lecturers and the assessors within the learning environment for a FE college or a private training provider, they have to complete CPD. They have to be, you know, if you're assessing on a qualification, they have to be up to date with their skills. What they're maybe not doing is working in the barbershop, though, full time. So they're not honing the skills that somebody, local employer, a salon on the high street could offer. So what we see with some of the best practices is where they really do engage with those employers on the high street or their local employers. They're coming in, they're doing workshops, they're doing almost mock testing with them. They're doing almost like mock trade tests, almost to prepare for their endpoint assessment. But they're engaging in not just the, you know, can they pass the test? Do they understand the knowledge? Do they understand? Can they apply the skill? But what about everything else? Can they converse with the client? Mm. Can they, you know, present a professional image? They're offering that real life experience. They're the ones that are the most successful.
I mean, it's as we speak now, it's a really tough time for providers. And I agree with you. There are some that are, you know, do your research. You know, if you're gonna go barber training, do your what the college, what the success rate is. But I know a lot of I subcontract, and the people we subcontract to in November. 10 apprentices were handed back by the salons. Not so much barbering, but by the, yeah. And it's so tough, especially the government putting the minimum wage up. It's tough times. Because at the end of the day, training providers are businesses. Mm-hmm. They're businesses. Some are better than others, you know. But it is, right now, it's a tough time. It really is. As I said to you earlier, if they cut deals with the barbers that are training. I mean, I think my first podcast, yes, it's a three-way thing. You've got the apprentice got to buy into it, the barbershop owner, and the training provider. And if those three buy into it, I think you have a successful outcome. But at the minute, it's a real tough time. And you know, it's interesting because I think you'd agree with me. Hairdressing salons, you've got stores, they all take apprentices on. Trying to get a barber to take an apprentice on, the academy I run, I've got several that ring us on a weekly basis that don't want to go through an apprenticeship process and they want to nick the barbers that we are nearly EPA to go and work in their shops. And obviously, that's not going to happen because I've got a great relationship with the barber shops and we have repeat business. So it is tough out there. But I just think do your research on training providers.
I mean, who is... like I said, this was some of the questions that came in from barbershop owners out there. But are they, and who is checking their standards?
Great question. Not me.
I guess it's when it's talking about standards of the apprentice, standards of the learner as such. It's kind
or
of
the, or the provider.
Or you the know, provider.
I mean, is the provider checked?
Ofsted, absolutely. So there's a
providing their Ofsted.
Yeah, there's a very strict agenda around behaviours, learning, you know, platforms, the learner's journey from Ofsted. You know, they are quality assuring that learning system taking place. And what an awarding organisation will do, we quality assure the delivery of the qualification. Yeah. Mm. So we have incredibly rigorous processes around making sure that, you know, what's being delivered, you know, the knowledge, the skills, the behaviours, the range, the scope of the qualification.
But are the trainers covered. Are the trainers who are the trainers who are training,
yes,
are they do they have an EPA, do they are they given an end point,
so
how do they become?
They should have their assessor's award to be
should
to be
have
teaching.
Or would have,
well they should have. But in saying that, a lot of training providers engage with barbers now,
yes,
to do the practical and they assess. And that gets back to whether they should be getting a cut of the money, you know? But
well, that was another point that Joth made. It was a matter of, you know, they are getting this money from government. This money is essentially our money.
I agree.
You know, it's not magic money. It comes out of all the taxes that we don't want to pay. And you know, for barbers, the providers are getting 9,000 a student.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I realise they're a business, and you know, maybe 9,000 a student isn't enough, but that's what they're getting.
It's tight.
But again,
I think it's more than enough.
The barbers are expected to do all this, and it's got a £12,000 penalty. So we're back to encouraging the belief of the industry or the philosophy of the barbershop owner that they want to pass on their education, or they believe it and they want this. So there's still, and then the government's hitting them with a stick of it's costing more. Mm. Yeah, we do seem to have hit, you know, like you say, this wonderful trilogy out there, but it's not there because we are finding that some providers don't engage. I certainly don't engage. We've had to switch several times. And we're working now with a provider that comes to us. Yeah. But we had students that were asking not to go to the college we were using. They just said that it's like a bun fight. There's so many people that don't want to do it. It's like a badly run class. No one's governing it. There's bullying. There's cliques. Appalling.
Yeah.
And then when I've approached that same college to say, listen, you know, hey, I may not be the greatest teacher in the world, but I'm 35 years in this industry. How can I help? Mm. I've been told I can't.
That's really disappointing. Mm. Just coming from myself being, you know, I managed a really large department myself in a large FE college of hairdressers and barbers and beauty therapists. That was actively encouraged. Mm. So that's a really disappointing to hear, you know, negative experience, because a lot of the customers and centres we work with reach out to us to say regularly, you know, can you put us in contact with some local employers or some stakeholders or professional associations? They want to readily engage with.
But
you know,
is that your role though? That's what I'm saying. Should they not? I've had, as I said to you earlier, amazingly, I've been a business owner now 35 years this year. I've got to find a way to celebrate. And for 35 years, I've qualified people. I have one of my apprentices runs one of our stores fantastically well. I have other apprentices that have gone on to open up their own stores. Mm. I celebrate it. I've never once been approached. I've never once picked up a newspaper or a local mag or anything and found myself looking at barbers, hairdressing salons, we need you, come to an evening at, you know, with ours, it's South Thames College or whatever college it is. I've never seen that at all.
Because I've been myself, I mean, most recently, it's a fantastic college, fairly close to me in Cambridgeshire, and they do employer breakfasts. So they invite local employers, you know, and this is quite common across the country, employer breakfasts where they invite along employers from the high street, you know, large employers, small, any size employers across hairdressing, barbering, beauty, to breakfasts, to brunches, you know, trying to work around that average working day to talk to them about apprenticeships, talk to them about how they can engage better with the awarding organisation or understanding the qualification or the assessors, the lecturers. So I've seen lots of good practice where that is happening. But like you're right,
but
there are pockets
you
where
have,
it's not.
I mean, I listened to something the other day that was just saying that you know, there are the thousands of people that are going into our industry. Now, the numbers were hair and barbering.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's huge numbers. But we're certainly still seeing that barbering has got this renaissance. I mean, you know, I've said it recently. You know, if you get a bunch of school leavers together now and say, what do you want to do? You're going to get people saying, I want to be a barber. You wouldn't have had that 10, 20 years
ago.
Absolutely. You know, so you've got that enthusiasm. I speak to barbers all the time that are like, can't get staff. Our biggest problem is recruitment. So they're struggling. And if we've not got people cutting hair, we're not making any money. So you have that angle there. We have this huge amount of students coming in, but we're not getting them. Yep. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So something's not working. And I'm, you know, and unfortunately, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because the start point really is the curriculum. It's
education.
It's what they're being taught. I know that I have to follow. I've given a manual and I have to teach my guys towards their EPA.
Yes.
It is not the way I write my program. Mm. I adapt ours to fit in with that, to get them to the EPA as fast as we can.
Fantastic.
But there is no point where I'm asked how, what. I purposely have to have a conversation where I retrain wise. I'm like, look, this student cannot concentrate for more than 45 minutes at the moment. Mm-hmm. Every 45 minutes we have a break.
Yes.
If you don't, we're going to lose them. Don't just lecture at them. Mm. They will sit there and go through their manual hour after hour after hour while you can see students fading out. Yeah, we've got... Yeah, they're being taught English and maths to an MVQ standard by people who aren't English and maths teachers.
Mm.
Yeah, that's disgraceful. You know, I had a student who was brilliant and is brilliant and has qualified, but was absolutely terrified of the maths bit of the whole process.
Yeah.
To the extent that I got a private tutor in and we got some online tutoring, and her exact words after the first check tutoring was, "Oh my God, no one's ever explained it like that." And I'd listened to her provider explain exactly the same, and it was blatantly obvious that the provider had no idea what she was talking about. How is this? How is it? How this, I mean, is part of the trilogy that's not working?
Agree, this is set by the government. I mean, you know, first of all, I'd say they've had 12 years of schooling that's failed them
to
get to that stage.
But they've come to barbering or hairdressing because they don't want to do maths in English.
Couldn't agree more. Again, the government set that. I think it's ridiculous. I really do. Some of the best hairdressers, barbers I know are dyslexic, and they are fantastic. They are rammed all the time. And it's something I hugely disagree with. But it's set there, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It is set there.
But this is why I come back and I say, I'm not trying to give you a shoe in.
Listen, I love all this. But what I'm saying is we have to employ a maths and English tutor ourselves in our academy to do it.
But we
haven't got the skills.
That should be the basic...
Yes.
Commitment. You know, if Ofsted are going to agree to someone who is essentially an ex-hairdresser who's now working as an educator for a provider who is showing that they're the ones doing maths and English, how? Why are they not bringing in a tutor for that?
The problem, I agree, the problem with Ofsted is they are not at all in any way interested in the skill of hairdressing or barbering. It's all about the paperwork. Am I right? I mean, it's the same guys that do schools that do us.
Yeah.
And you can imagine it finds a shit out of us when they come in. It is the exact same. I'm correct to that. The exact same Ofsted. And you know, they don't look to see how skillful that student may be. That's just it.
Is your paperwork all ticked?
Yes. You know, that's what they're looking at. Are the signatures in the right boxes?
What we have is a creative industry.
Yes.
And this is where it's evidently failing. You know, yes, you've got the criteria, and of course there needs to be a route to it. But prior to your involvement, you were training barbers. Your dad
trained
you. He wasn't sitting there with an MVQ, sitting in guilds, VTCT, trainer checking up on him.
Yeah.
I've heard you're a half-decent barber.
Who's been lying to you?
But do you see what I mean? I mean, this is the problem. So from a barbering point of view, I feel it's been taken away from us. You know, we're not consulted as to how the criteria is set or how.
Oh, but you can be. So those government steering groups, that's where you need to get involved.
Okay.
So the standards.
Speak about this. So this is not something I've ever been invited to, and I'm very involved in the industry.
Can I be honest? I mean, I work closely with C&G, and I contact loads of top barbers and say, join the steering group. And these guys generally haven't got the time to do it. I recommend them. I'm kind of glad that I sit on it a little bit, to be honest. I mean, I think some of it is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, but it's set by the government. I'm correct, yeah?
And I think that's what we need to, you know, really emphasize and sort of dispel those misconceptions that the awarding organizations, we don't set the standard for the apprenticeships. So that comes from the Institute, the Department for Education's, you know, trailblazer, there's steering groups. So there's a steering group, an employer-based steering group set up for every sort of industry, every sector area. So you have one for the barbers, the hairdressers, the constructions, the bricklayers, the nurses, the dental hygienist, absolutely anywhere where there's an occupational standard. So getting involved with those groups is key. It's difficult. I would agree. Coming myself from an education sort of expertise kind of role, we work with the Education Department for Education Institute all of the time. So we understand how to engage with those groups. Mm. But you literally, you know, online on the Institute's website, you can search any occupational standard and it lists who the chairs are, who to contact, how to get involved.
I mean, it's a very, very good point. I sit on steering groups and we sit there with Skills England that's going to be now. And I say, can we do 20 haircuts and less maths and English? No, you're going to do six. And they won't extend that, give us more guided learning hours. And for me, that's what you need. Shaving, can we have, you know, 20 shaves? No, we're only going to assess two or three. And that's the problem. It's government led. Mm. And somewhere along the line, the industry's not been strong enough for the government. I mean, you know, when I see this, that, you know, you can do six haircuts and you're qualified, it's ridiculous. Whereas when I go on them, I'm saying, why can't we do 20? You know, why do we have to do this and this and this? But the problem is, it's government. And this is, I think it sits, the standards sit across every apprenticeship, would I be right?
That's absolutely right.
And we have
right.
to make it fit. The AOs have to make it fit. Yeah. But I think it's ridiculous. But and so I do voice my opinion at these meetings. But they'll say, no, that's your guided learning hours for that. And that should be extended. Mm.
But don't forget looking out for those consultations as well. And again, I appreciate, unless you're in the education world, you probably or may miss that on LinkedIn or, you know, the different sort of email circulation lists. But engaging, every single standard will have a formal consultation process. So it will go out to consultation and, you know, desperately asking for voices. You know, let us know what you think. What do you think to this for every single standard that's written? But perhaps there's another piece of work that needs to happen around how do you better engage those consultations with industry. You know, the salon owners, the barbers out there who aren't potentially going to check their LinkedIn statuses, you know, their feeds and things like that to access those consultations.
But I mean, that's where it seems to be lost. I mean, I'm going to keep using your Trinity as a staple for this conversation because it does make sense. And I'm sure you've been peddling it for years. So I'm going
to listen, mate. I wrote it.
So the, you know, but if we can see at least one of these spokes is broken, personally, I think all three have been broken, if I'm really honest. But if we can see that there's evidently an issue with the provider, mm-hmm. whether it is the this is between the curriculum mm-hmm. and the student, mm. because, you know, you said a moment ago, these 8 to 12 week courses aren't fit for purpose, but they will do more haircuts than a full-time If you were to do a full-time college course, you would, over the course of a year, 15 months, you would do less haircutting than if you did a 12-week, I won't name schools, but we've had them on, than if you did one of these schools. These schools are very adamant that in a 12-week period, you will do at least 100 haircuts.
Yeah, and I've got no, when I say they're not fit, I mean, you know, if you're looking at the current trends out there and you're doing 100 haircuts, then you're fit to do those.
I don't disagree with that.
But what I'm saying is, if somebody, you know, fashion will change.
Yeah.
And I know on a previous podcast, I think it was Mike from London School of Barbering, quite rightly said, we don't want that to go. We don't want skin fades to go because these guys are in every week. But the reality is fashion will change, you know? I mean, I remember my dad was a barber, as I said to you, and in the 70s, everybody grew their hair and he bought scrapyard as well as his barber shop, you know, because he was just doing young kids and older people. So fashion will change. Mm. And I don't think they're equipped for that, but certainly they're probably, you know, you must have it. I get it all the time where people come to me, they've done a 6 or 8 week course at some of the top places and it's not worked for them. You know, they come and do a trade test or they go to another barbershop. What we're finding is they're really good from the point of view of we've had lots of people that have ended up as apprentices elsewhere because it's a different code. Yeah. So you can then claim the apprenticeship funding. Yeah. So it's a really good foundation for going into a barbershop and the barbershop buying into it and taking on as an apprentice. Mm. So that's the way it is. you know, you can't argue against 100 because at college you'll probably do 10 or 20 possibly in a year.
Gosh, I'm not sure.
No, I'm being honest. I run an FE college for about 7 or 8 years, and it was very difficult to get models to come in. They're all doing their own hair. We've done hairdressing, barbering, and beauty. And don't get me wrong, you know this. They're under the cosh. Colleges, there's so much paperwork. I mean, we are very fortunate. We're going out soon to work for the Irish, fantastic Northern Ireland at Titanic Docks.
Wow.
College, you know the name of the college.
I'm not sure.
Brilliant. And we're going out to do something for them. But, you know, there are colleges that are excellent.
Yes.
And I mean excellent. They really are, you know.
But there doesn't seem to be a kind of roll call. We don't celebrate. Mm. There's not this kind of gold standard that I can look at. When I looked at my apprentices, it was, what have I got? I knew the local college wasn't somewhere my team wanted to engage with. So we ended up looking for a provider that comes to us. There was no kind of gold standard. Listen, I'm going to send you here. I know it's a half-hour train ride, but they're the best. There's no way of finding that out.
But Belfast Met, fantastic. All the team there are absolutely fantastic.
But, and, you know, that's just one of the spokes that I think.
Mark Hawthorne, a great barber that's come out of there. The apprenticeship with Ollie Foster, who's doing all this stuff for the Barber Bash.
Yeah.
So there's absolutely fantastic people that we've had through national competitions.
Yes.
That have gone on, and these are all come through colleges. So they are there. You know, it is there. But, you know, it's I think the biggest obstacle now, and for me, the elephant in the room is, your barbers are charging 10 and 20 quid and, you know, only take cash. And I'm not knocking all them there. I'm not knocking them guys. But they can't afford to send an apprentice on, can they? There's just not enough revenue coming in.
I mean, I don't disagree, but I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, that's not my model, but I can't really afford it.
No, to be honest with you,
it's a real, decision for me to make.
I think that's going to be hairdressing as well. It's a real tough, with the national minimum wage going up to where it is, it's going to be a tough gig for training providers.
And there are lots of companies, very big groups, you know, that I was chatting to, who are now reducing their students' hours down to a 30-hour week.
30-hour, yes.
You know, and so you kind of go, we're giving them less. So that's the other part of the spoke that I think is broken, because then what you've got is the heartbreak for me is you've got these young people, or you've got people who aren't 16 but are coming to it for a second or third career, who come at barbering with such energy and enthusiasm and positiveness. And it feels like to me that there's a lie going on. And I think the lie permeates everywhere except from the barbershop. I think that the lie permeates with the qualifications, I think with the providers, with the private schools. I think there's this lie that you will get there. And what we're finding as barbershops is...
Define lie.
Well, I mean, like I said, if you go for the providers, there should be at least a 50% failure rate. So there'd be 50% that don't make it through. If you lower the bar enough and they still get their qualification, they still get their EPA, that's a lie. You're getting these. Yeah. You're convincing these people that they've got their qualification, therefore they should get a job.
I think the apprenticeship is tougher than ever with the EPA.
Yes. Mm.
College and private training providers that are doing 6-12-week courses, you know, that's possibly a box-ticking exercise. I'm not knocking college. I'm talking about the private training providers, you know, and they're not leaving as fully competent barbers, are they? Let's be honest. They've had an introduction to barbering, and they come all the time, I'm qualified. I mean, I've done 5 years. I've done a 2-year sitting guild. Then you've done a 3rd-year operator. I've done an Old Bond Street. Done a 2-year advanced sitting guild.
That's the lie, I think, that's being spread. You know, it's not, none of this is being called an introduction. Yeah. None of this is called a starter point. None of it's called a support. Well, it's all tied up as an apprenticeship.
Anthony, I know for a fact that City and Guild are doing an intro.
Yes. Now that's a full-time education.
Yeah, full-time, but
so
still.
Absolutely. You know, you can start with
an
introduction.
This is interesting. Yeah.
And move into, you know, up the levels. I think, you know, what you're really sort of talking there is about that endpoint assessment. And we see people fail. We do. You know, there are apprentices who fail those endpoint assessments. So I think the new way of, you know, the apprenticeship standards now, since we move from that SACE kind of, you've got your MVQ, you're done, that's it, you're qualified. So introducing that endpoint assessment is making sure that an independent endpoint assessor is going in, the apprentice has completed their qualification, so they're qualified in terms of, you know, they've covered the knowledge, the skills, the behaviours, they've demonstrated they can apply those things. But the endpoint assessment brings it to life. So the endpoint assessment is watching them in that salon environment. And that's where we do see people fail. You know, we're coming in as completely independent. These are people that are employed across the country. They have to be people who are working in industry. They have to demonstrate their skills, their work, you know, is up to date, that they're doing a proportion of work in industry. So these aren't just, you know, people that have been, I don't know, in education for 50 years and not stepped foot in a salon, you know, since. They're people who are real life barbers, hairdressers, therapists out there. And I think it's the endpoint assessment that brings it to life. It concretes the learning in a real working situation. The challenge, I think, before that is finding that employer, like you said, to do that apprenticeship. Yeah. You know, one of my my young son, one of his best friends wants to be a barber. And we've been talking exactly about this for the last few months. You know, the challenge he's had, you know, trying to find a barber shop wanting to take and willing to take on a barber. And it's been really difficult because a lot of places now, as you said, I think post-pandemic, even more so, are doing the rent-a-chair model, the self-employed model. You need somebody who's going to be able to take on that commitment, the contract, you know, in education and supporting that young person in their learning journey, you know, in a formal terms of employment. But he's found somewhere and he's super excited and passionate. And that's the thing you were talking about earlier, you know, nurturing that enthusiasm for our wonderful industry. But it's becoming more and more challenging. People willing to take on the barber for cost reasons and time. You know, time is, you've got to be able to commit that time to be able to support that journey as well.
I mean, I love your podcasts. I've watched them all. And I see some iconic guys talking about people in the industry. I spoke to you earlier about my son, Joe, with, he's got 88, Love to Create, him and his business partner, Joey. And they had this problem a few years ago and they bought into organically growing the barbers. They've now got 10 barbers, you know, and they are all trained by them and brought them through. Now, the problem is the costing, as we said earlier. But, you know, there's some iconic guys on here. And you got, if you invest in organically grow your people, you can then get, you know, you can build your team. And they're all going to be singing from the same hymn sheet, aren't they? So it's
is his a chair rental operation?
No, all employed. All employed. Yeah. Pay a fortune to that man.
Mine's employed too.
Yeah,
guys, thank you very much. I'm going to stop that first part there. I think I need to kind of collate my thoughts ready for part two. I do think, like I say, I'm going to finish where we started with your trilogy. Yeah, I think there definitely is this lack of communication between provider, barber, and student. And I, you know, I don't want to pass all the blame, but I do think quite a lot of it is sitting with the provider's lack of engagement with their local community. Because if you throw a rock from any barber shop in any borough of the country, they're going to hit a provider somewhere.
Yeah, cool.
And I just think it's a shame that we're being asked to go and knock on their door when actually they need us more. That's my thought on part one. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed. We will be back for part two. I've still got a big while of paperwork that I haven't got through here, so I will cover all the things that have been sent in and asked. Thank you very much. Speak to you soon.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.